First, former President Donald Trump has maintained that the 2020 election should have been a victory for him and his campaign. In particular, the former president has pointed to what he and his supporters claim is widespread voter fraud for his loss to now President Joe Biden. These claims have been proven to be incorrect, so they've been debunked by numerous organizations, including organizations like the Brennan Center for Justice. But the idea of widespread voter fraud did not originate with President Trump or his campaign. It can actually be traced back to a Texas businessman who spent years looking for GOP candidates who lost elections to take up the cause. Our next guest was part of a team who traced the push to use voter fraud as a way to challenge elections from what could be called the political fringe to the political mainstream, and how it has had repercussions over the past several months. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What has been your takeaway from the 2020 election to today? What do you think about voter fraud claims? What questions do you have about these widespread voter fraud claims, though now debunked and have been debunked? Why do you think they became so prolific? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Emma Brown is an investigative reporter at The Washington Post. Emma, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get started, we should go pretty far back. So can you set the scene for us to tell us exactly who Russell Ramsland Jr. is?
Absolutely. He is a Texas Republican businessman, an oil. His family has a history in oil in Texas. He is a sort of Tea Party activist. He ran for Congress to the right of Pete Sessions in 2016 and lost in the Republican primary there. But the reason we became interested in Russell Ramsland, I don't know if your listeners remember, there was a press conference at the RNC, the Republican National Committee, with Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell in November 19th. Of right after the election. And it was a really wild kind of press conference. I mean, Rudy Giuliani was sweating. There was like hair dye running down his face. And he and Sidney Powell, they were saying things that just sounded so outlandish to many people who are listening. We've never heard this before, this idea that Venezuelan machines were running our elections and that the machines themselves had algorithms in them that were flipping votes and so on. And what we became interested in Russell Ramsland because some of these claims that seemed so new about voting machines being corrupted or somehow hacked that seemed new in 2020 had we found he had been saying and repeating for a couple of years before the election and giving these briefings in a office that was basically a converted airplane hangar next to an airstrip. Outside Dallas, where he had a security firm called Allied Security Operations Group, briefing Republican activists and politicians, sometimes members of Congress. He spoke, in the years before the election to Sidney Powell herself and Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas. Anyway, he was spreading this message much earlier than it became known to sort of most of America.
Now, there is another player kind of behind the scenes, a woman named Laura Presley. Can you take us back to her and her involvement since we're getting some historical basis for all of this?
Sure. Laura Presley is an activist in Texas. She ran for Austin City Council years ago. She lost, and she became convinced that she lost because of either fraudulent or, messed up machines, voting machines. These are machines, they've pretty much been phased out around the country now, but they were the kind of machines called DREs that don't print a paper record when you vote. And so it's very, they've been sort of flagged by security specialists as very problematic for that reason. And that was the kind of machine used in her election. And so she started a sort of a effort to get to the bottom of what she felt was this problem in her election. And she obtained audit logs from elections in Texas. Audit logs are, there's there's sort of a record of everything that the central tabulating machine does in an election. And she saw what she thought was very suspicious stuff in that election and brought a lawsuit. Her claims were not upheld in court, but she eventually met up with Russell Ramblin and told him about what she thought she had seen in these audit logs. And those became part of his central case that there was something wrong with the machines that we're all voting on.
And we are talking to Emma Brown right now. She's an investigative reporter for The Washington Post, and she and her team recently took a deep dive into the origins of what are now debunked claims of widespread election fraud, specifically in the 2020 election, where former President Donald Trump lost to now President Joe Biden. And, you know, a few minutes ago, you were talking about this meeting that happened at an airplane hangar where Ramblin was there. He spoke with, other Republican operatives or people big in the party. What happened at that meeting?
Yeah, so he and Presley, they wanted to find a Republican candidate for after the 2018 midterms. They wanted to find a Republican candidate who had lost their race and would challenge their race in order to sort of get more information about what had happened with the machines, get more information about the machines, more data. And they pitched a couple of candidates, among them Don Huffines, who's now running for governor of Texas, who had lost his seat in the legislature, and Pete Sessions, a congressman who had also lost. And neither of them took action on the basis of these claims. Neither of them ended up challenging their losses.
And do we have a sense as to why these candidates in particular didn't buy into it? Do we have a sense about that at all?
I think what we can say about that is it's not necessarily that they didn't believe that there was something wrong, but I think they perhaps didn't believe that they could prevail and sort of make a successful case in overturning the results of their particular elections. So, I think that's about the extent of what we know.
And can you talk about allied security operations, because that plays a role in all of this too?
Yeah, that's the name of Russ Ramblin's firm in Texas, and they, this firm started. So there were these efforts before the election to kind of spread this message about hackable and hacked voting machines. And then after the 2020 election, Allied Security Operations Group, or ASOG, started popping up kind of all over the place in these efforts to challenge the election results. They were the Russell Ramblin, as an executive of the firm, was submitting affidavits in Sidney Powell's lawsuits. Others who are affiliated with the firm were testifying for Rudy Giuliani at each of his meetings around the country in swing states, trying to convince legislators to appoint different electors or investigate further. So the firm became sort of not ubiquitous is too strong a word, but they were popping up in a lot of important places in spreading the message after the election as well.
Now we have this basis, and eventually they found their candidate. They couldn't convince other candidates to take up this charge, but they were able to make inroads with the Trump campaign. And you talked a little bit about that, these meetings with other allies like Rudy Giuliani. How did these paths start crossing? And in your investigation, did you see that that kind of the path to what we later heard was kind of already set?
Yeah, I think what's pretty, what you said at the beginning of your question is very true. These claims were really on the fringe and until the 2020 election, when President Trump, just to be clear, he never met Russell Ramblin, but he met people and was close to people who had been talking with Ramblin, right? Like Sidney Powell, Louie Gohmert, Rudy Giuliani. And so, you know, this idea about hacked voting machines that had been fringe before, Trump latched onto and started tweeting about, and many people started to believe it.
We are talking with Washington Post investigative reporter Emma Brown right now. She's with us to talk about how allegations of widespread voter fraud gained traction in the 2020 election. And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What have been some of your takeaways from how voter fraud claims became widespread? How would you like to see elections work moving forward? Call in now. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR, and we will pick up this conversation in just a moment here on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Washington Post investigative reporter Emma Brown. She recently worked on a piece that followed how election fraud moved from an airplane hangar in Texas to a political main stage. Some folks say that it's just been debunked. Others go so far as to say that it is a myth. There's a lot of language there. But we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this issue? What else do you want to know about the charges of widespread voter fraud? Call 800-642-1234. Again, the number is 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Tim in Wabisa. Hi, Tim.
Hi. So I get all over Western Wisconsin and Eastern Minnesota. And I can think I could put a little bit of a view on the psychology behind it. People who live in a bubble, so I have mostly liberal friends. A lot of my people that I deal with have mostly conservative friends. So if they're told before an election that the only way we're going to lose this election is if the other side cheats, it matches with their narrative because they don't know any liberals. They only know conservatives. They only know Trump supporters. And of course, somebody had to have cheated if we lost, because there can't be that many liberals out there.
Tim, thank you for that call. And this comes back, if we were going to kind of accelerate this conversation, to a really big flashpoint in where widespread voter fraud became dangerous. And that was on January 6th, when President Trump's supporters went to the Capitol and caused a lot of destruction and violence in many ways. What was the connection between, what we're hearing, this kind of echo chamber, to what happened on January 6th?
Well, I think that, you know, the idea that the election was stolen is a big idea that's made up of many strands and many sort of disparate claims, right? So what we know is a lot of people in the country, we know from polling that a lot of people, and particularly a lot of Republicans, believe that the election was not secure, that it was influenced by some kind of impropriety, whether that's hacking of machines or improprieties around the absentee ballots or what have you. And so that, you know, we know that a lot of people believe that, and that Trump was, you know, telling his supporters on January 6th that if they wanted a country, they had to fight for it and so on. He continued to insist that day that he had been wronged and that he had actually won. So I think that what we saw on January 6th is related to people's belief in the falsehood that Trump was the rightful winner of the election.
I want to go back to our callers right now. We have Paul in the Upper Peninsula. Hi, Paul.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I think part of the problem is we all collectively, media included, need to really have very clear and succinct language that's fewer syllables and very, very succinct. You know, several times there's been a comment about debunked. A lot of people are not sure what that means. It's been proven false. It's very demonstrably been proven false. And when we talk about that in those kind of terms, or intentionally lied, intentionally misled to some of these people, I think it's much more clear to most of the public than using terms like debunked and some of these other ones that have a lot of vagarity and opacity on them.
Paul, Paul, thank you so much for that call. And I will say that I typically will use debunked because there you can always run afoul in some ways of how language is used. But that is an appreciated comment on my part. What do you think about what he had to say, Emma?
Well, I appreciate what the caller said. And I, you know, in our story, we went to lengths to explain exactly what some of these claims were that were being spread before the election and then after the election about machines being hacked and so on, and then explain why experts said that that was either not possible or there was no sign of that having happened. We also explained that in many jurisdictions there were hand counts or recounts of paper ballots, which confirmed that the machines reported results accurately. So, you know, as you may recall, in Georgia, there was a recount of the entire state of the hand ballots that showed that the machines in that state had counted accurately. The same thing happened in Antrim County, Michigan, where there has been this long-running claim that the machines there flipped a lot of votes for from Trump to Biden. They too counted their ballots, paper ballots, and found that the machines reported accurate results. So I think, you know, in our story, we tried to explain, not just say that something had been debunked, but explain exactly what we know and how we know it.
We are talking to Emma Brown right now. She's an investigative reporter for The Washington Post, and we're taking a deep dive look into the origins of false claims, debunked claims of widespread voter fraud in the 2020 election and their origins about 6 years earlier. And so we are right now seeing pretty big audits in other states right now of their election results. We are now in July. The election was in November. You know, obviously so-called widespread voter fraud is not the only reason why this is happening, but how has it sort of dominated the conversation here and led to what we're seeing in places like Arizona?
Yeah, I think the audits have become the focal point for people who believe that the election was stolen through hacked machines. And I just mentioned Antrim County, Michigan. ASOG, the Russell Ramsland's firm, conducted what they said was a forensic audit of the machines there and claimed, as this is part of a court case, claimed to have found a 68% error rate in the Dominion machines there. That was totally false. It has been shown to be totally false. They misunderstood what they were looking at when they made that claim. Nevertheless, it was tweeted by President Trump in mid-December and was sort of became a rallying cry. This their findings in Antrim County became a rallying cry. And so I think that these, you know, what we see is people latching on to these audits or the idea of doing more audits as because they believe that they'll be able to find the evidence that has not yet been forthcoming, that there actually was fraud. And I, you know, it's a sign, I think, that the suspicions around the election that were, were part of the January 6th attack on the Capitol are not going away. They've not gone away. They're still with us and still driving politics and political decisions.
So if we are looking at some of the ripple effects of certainly what we saw in 2018 through 2020 and moving forward, we have midterms coming up in 2022. Could we start seeing more pushback from candidates in this vein moving forward? Obviously, it's still a little early, but do we have kind of political foresight here into what 2020 might look like?
Well, I think the audits have caused some, you know, observers to wonder whether this is the beginning of elections never ending and never being, concession speeches never happening and people continuing to fight the last election while preparing for the next. So I think that is a very much an open question, sort of how the aftermath of the 2020 election is going to feed into and change the way that elections and, you know, concessions of people recognizing publicly that they've lost, whether that's a tradition that we will start to lose.
And Emma, before we let you go, you're part of this investigative team. What will you be watching for next?
I am continuing, along with others at the Washington Post, continuing to watch the claims that are being made about the last election, but also looking for new claims made as we approach the midterms, as you said. I'm also really interested in what many experts have said are security concerns, new security concerns in areas where private actors, like in Arizona, are working hands-on with these machines. They have said that the act of handing over custody of these machines to sort of non-government people, non-government officials, exposes them potentially to greater security risks than we've had in the past. So I think that election security moving forward is going to be something that continues to be a really important issue to cover carefully.
Emma, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Washington Post investigative reporter Emma Brown explaining the origins of debunked claims of widespread voter fraud during the 2020 election and what it could mean for elections moving forward. Certainly, we have the 2022 midterms coming up. It's 2021, but they're right around the corner.